Thank you, Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, July 1st, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
In a move to curb power theft by consumers, the government says plans to switch from prepaid meters to smart meters are at an advanced stage.
They've been failing to read ordinary meters, not even prepaid meters. Taking reading has been a big challenge for them. And now they are coming up with these very highly advanced technological issues, which they don't even understand themselves. There's no capacity, there are no engineers, people have left this.
Zimbabweans across the political divide joined hands today to commemorate the passing on 15 years ago of former Vice President Joshua Mkabuko Nyongolo Nkomo.
The day before, the old man had asked me to bring a pastor of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the late Pastor R.R. Njong, who was very close to him. So when I brought R.R. to the hospital, they embraced and they cried and cried. I also cried.
And some Zimbabwe lawmakers are reportedly stranded in a remote Chinese province after what is believed to be a shopping spree.
In a move to curb power theft by consumers, the government says plans to switch from prepaid meters to smart meters are at an advanced stage, and it will soon be mandatory for all newly built homes to have the smart meters installed. The government's plan is to install 800,000 meters, that is 500,000 prepaid meters and 3,000 smart meters. So far, ZESA has installed 420,000 prepaid meters. However, Binga South legislator Joel Gabuza, who's also a member of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Mines and Energy, tells reporter Standigile Mhlanga the government should first review and rectify the success and failure of the prepaid meters before embarking on an even more complicated project.
This issue of smart meters was discussed at cabinet level during the unit government that week, which was supposed to, in the first place, reduce the cost of reading meters and increase the ZESA revenues, save on electricity, because at least 10 people are going to regulate the consumption of electricity on their bills. Now, we haven't been told whether all these three aspects have been achieved, because not all the 500,000 prepaid meters have been sold. And we're now jumping into a new system which will not even be able to manage.
But the government says it will save about $10 million, which is lost monthly through prepaid meters.
Yeah, but when we talked about putting prepaid meters, it was supposed also to reduce the theft of electricity. Firstly, government must explain to the consumers that we have saved so much. There's no doubt in my mind that certainly there might be some big weebs and possibly in government who are finding lucrative tender deals to try and install these smart meters. They are not necessary at this point in time. And what they must be telling us now is how they intend to improve the electricity availability for the consumers. Certainly, we don't have the technology. We'll have to import the technology. And once that technology is there, nobody will be able to maintain it. And they have been failing to read ordinary meters, not even prepaid meters. Taking readings has been a big challenge for them. And now they are coming up with these very highly advanced technological issues, which they don't even understand themselves. There's no capacity. There are no engineers. People have left them.
That was Binga South legislator Joel Gabuza, who is also a member of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Mines and Energy, on the phone from Binga. The Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe has met with Zimbabwe's Education Minister to seek a clarification over a recent blanket ban on the organization preventing its members from visiting schools. PTUZ Secretary Raymond Majongwe says they met with Education Minister Lazarus Dokora on Sunday and discussed this issue together with other issues affecting the education sector. Majongwe says the other issues discussed included the requirement that all teachers must have English, maths and science subjects and the banning of sporting activities during midweek, among other issues. Studio 7 failed to reach Minister Dokora for a comment. But Majongwe says after meeting with the minister, they discovered that he was not aware of many matters that were presented to them as coming from the minister.
The meeting happened on Sunday. Yes, I can confirm. And we covered quite a number of issues. Among them, the letter that was written by the permanent secretary cancelling or banning PTUZ from visiting schools, a matter that the minister said it was not out of consultation and is going to make sure that another letter is written cancelling the cancellation that had been instructed by the permanent secretary. And secondly, we also looked at the issue of mathematics, English and science that has caused so much panic in our schools. And the minister said, contrary to what is being said, he has identified a German donor who wants to assist teachers to better their educational qualifications so that their output in terms of teaching is enhanced. So to the contrary, it is not correct that teachers who don't have math and science are going to be dismissed or are going to be forced to rewrite those subjects.
There is this issue of non-Ndebele speaking teachers being deployed to Matabeleland region. What did the minister say about this?
Apparently, we must confess that this is a very politically sensitive issue which must be treated with utmost care. Otherwise, we will then create unnecessary tribal challenges in the region, which is why we then say to the minister, this is a territory that we must delve into very carefully so that we don't start unnecessary wars of panic and confusion.
That was Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary General Raymond Majongwe on the phone from Macheke with Studio 7.
A youth association which launched a global campaign to build schools at Chingwizi Camp in Maswingo Camp, sheltering villagers displaced by floods, says they received a large quantity of goods, though they did not meet their goals. The Practical Empowerment Youth Association, or PENYA, earlier this month launched a fund to raise $5,000 for building schools. The association says they sourced 15,000 books for school children at Chingwizi Camp. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks to PENYA Director Hilary Musarurwa about the fundraising drive.
Unfortunately, our fundraiser did not go as planned. The initial challenge to raise $5,000, we're only able to raise $120. So the fundraiser was, if I can say, it was a flop.
What do you hope to do next in regards to still assisting school children in the Chingwizi holding camp?
Well, the fundraising did not go well. We were able to get a pledge of 15,000 reading books for the children in Chingwizi. So these books are with a partner in Cape Town, and I think around the 15th of July, we'll be able to box those books, put them together ready for shipment. I think the only challenge now is getting those books up to Zimbabwe to get them to Chingwizi. And I think one thing that we're going to do is use that $120 that was raised on Global Giving to help finance the shipping, but it's not going to be enough. I'm hoping to talk to a few corporate or maybe the humanitarian organizations based in Zimbabwe, like UNICEF or IOM, to get at least a pledge or assistance in logistical issues to get those books to Chingwizi.
Many residents who are now staying at Chingwizi holding camp have complained about the various conditions. Do you think that enough has been done to assist?
Certainly, we haven't done enough. I think the Zimbabwean community has not come to the party to try and assist these children. In my own opinion, our government has failed dismally in assisting the people in Chingwizi. So I think this is a problem where we've just dealt with it with apathy, really. I think the efforts are there. They are far and fetched, but I'm sure as Zimbabweans, we could have done better to assist these people.
That was Practical Empowerment Youth Association, Hilary Musarura, speaking with Studio 7.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington. Did you know you can listen to web audio replays of our programs on our website and sign up for newsletters in English, Shona and Ndebele?
Visit our site at www.studio7news.com. You can also give us feedback by text message. Our number is 1-202-465-0318.
Zimbabweans across the political divide joined hands today to commemorate the passing on 15 years ago of former Vice President Joshua Mkabuko Nkomo. Blessing Zulu has the story.
15 years ago, on this day, President Robert Mugabe announced to the nation that Nkomo had died at Parenyatwa Hospital in Harare. The president said on state radio, and I quote, "I regret to announce to you the passing away early this morning of our beloved compatriot, one of the stalwarts of Zimbabwe's struggle for the 1950s to the 1970s for independence from Britain." Nkomo was regarded by many political analysts as the president that Zimbabwe never had. Mr. Mugabe and Mr. Nkomo were former partners and rivals during and after the Liberation War in the 1970s. They were detained together between 1964 and 1974 by rebel Rhodesian Prime Minister Ian Douglas Smith. Nkomo lost to Mr. Mugabe in the 1980 general election, and in 1982, the ZANU-PF government launched the now infamous Gukurahundi War in Matabeleland and Midlands provinces, resulting in Nkomo going into exile. Thousands of people were allegedly killed. PF ZAPU and ZANU later signed the 1987 unity agreement, resulting in a unity government and paving way for Nkomo to be the vice president. But Nkomo, being a great nationalist, refuted the popular view that Gukurahundi was a tribal war.
It could be a tribal army, but in fact not a Shona tribal army, as some people say it is. Some people believe that because the 5th Brigade is made up of Shona-speaking young people, and therefore its actions are actions of the Shona against Ndebele. I think this is a misrepresentation. I don't think it is so.
But what really happened during the last days of the late nationalist's days? His cousin brother, Samos Pepa Nkomo, opened up exclusively to Studio 7 how he and his late brother, also former Vice President John Nkomo, took care of the veteran nationalist.
The day before, the old man had asked me to bring a pastor of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the late Pastor R.R. Njong, who was very close to him. So when I brought R.R. to a hospital, they embraced and they cried and cried. I also cried. Now, the following day, my brother, J.M. Nkomo, and I were taking turns to sit with the old man when he was in hospital in Parirenyatwa. So on that particular day, his turn, J.M. Nkomo's turn to sit came. I went home to go in the shower. Now, when I was there 30 minutes, J.M. phones me and said, come back. When I came back, the old man was gone.
During his days, Nkomo, known as Father Zimbabwe, yearned for unity and economic empowerment and fought against corruption, nepotism, and related issues. But are these dreams being fulfilled? ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo says the government is doing its best to fulfill them.
Comrade Nkomo was one of the leaders who injected a very strong historical perspective on the land issue. That land belonged to the Zimbabweans, and land was taken away from Zimbabwe by the colonialists, imperialists, and so on and so forth.
But opposition MDCT organizing secretary Nelson Chamisa says ZANU-PF has fallen short.
Nkomo was so passionate about land. And as we speak, the issue of land has not been put to finality. We have not redistributed land in an equitable manner. We still have people who own 5 farms each, 6 farms each, a multiplicity of farms.
Chamisa's sentiments were also echoed by rival Tendai Biti, the de facto leader of another MDC faction, MDC Renewal Team.
Joshua Nkomo is the founding father of the liberation movement. He's turning in his grave because the post-liberation Zimbabwe is nowhere near what Joshua Nkomo and many other brave comrades would have gone to war for. Zimbabwe is a total subversion of the ideals of the liberation struggle. Just look at the standard of living of Zimbabweans.
ZAPU Vice President Emilia Mukaratirwa also says the nation has betrayed the aspirations of Nkomo.
If we look at the current situation in Zimbabwe today, people are suffering. People are suffering left, right, and center. There are no jobs in the country. The health services are not there. And service delivery in general has deteriorated.
Political analyst Ernest Mudzengi says what Nkomo fought for his entire life was for the right of the people to vote, though sadly, modern-day Zimbabwe has become an embarrassment for denying people that fundamental right. Nkomo's daughter, Tandi, says they are doing their best to keep their father's memory alive.
This is the 15th anniversary of since he died, and his legacy actually is growing stronger and bigger every year from what we have witnessed with the honors that have been accomplished. As you know, this last year, there was the statue put up, the road as named after him in Bulawayo, as well as the airport, the Bulawayo International Airport. One thing I've witnessed is it is a number of groups that have been set up, you know, to in his name to promote the legacy and so forth.
She says more still needs to be done to ensure that his memory is kept alive. Despite the political polarization that is characterizing Zimbabwe today, Nkomo remains a uniting figure and source of inspiration to many. Reporting for VOA Studio 7 for Zimbabwe, this is Blessing Zulu.
You talked, we listened. By popular demand, Studio 7 Live Talk is launching our very own Women's Round Table starting Thursday, July 16. This show seeks to address issues of concern to us as women. Tell us what you want us to discuss via email at studio7@voanews.com. The address again, studio7@voanews.com, or on WhatsApp 1-202-465-0318. The number again, 1-202-465-0318. And of course, on our Studio 7 Facebook page.
The number of pre-approved applications for private radio licenses has dwindled from the previously shortlisted 18 to 13, as it has emerged that most of them cannot pay the hefty fees and levies charged to set up the entities. The applicants were required to pay $2,500 as non-refundable application fees. Then those that were shortlisted were required to pay a further $7,500. Finally, those whose applications will be successful will pay $50,000 each. Those that have dropped out are Lupane Radio, Vukisa Services of Lupane, Mosi Radio of Victoria Falls, Masego Multimedia of Bulawayo, Vox Media Productions of Harare, and ABC Communications of Harare. Many musicians are eagerly expecting the setting up of the radio stations. We spoke to one of the musicians, Kulekani Betule, also known as Cooksman, who says the establishment of radio stations is a long-awaited development.
As an artist, what I'm looking forward is that the radio station, any of the stations that is going to be granted a license, is going to take the local artist's interest in ways such as giving the local artist airplay. And also making sure that whenever those artists are given that airplay, they also get their royalties. Because at the moment, you find that artists are having so much difficulty in getting their royalties. So we hope that these new stations will do things differently.
Do you face the problem of not having enough airplay as musicians?
I would say, looking at this issue, on a personal level, I would say I'm not so sure the criteria that is used for selecting the music that then goes on to be given the airplay. Because if I look at my projects, they do get airplay. If I send my music to any radio station, the DJs make sure they at times play the music. I can't really complain on a personal level, but not being selfish, I would also take into consideration my colleagues' concerns. Why not getting the airplane? I'm not so sure why they are not getting that airplane.
That was musician Kulekani Betule, also known as Cooksman, speaking on the line with Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kilohertz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Zimbabwean parliamentarians are stuck in a remote Chinese province after a shopping spree. Stay tuned. But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
A former French President Nicolas Sarkozy is in custody of financial investigators while being questioned about insider information he allegedly received about a campaign finance probe.
The United Nations says gender-based violence against Central African Republic refugees in East Cameroon is very high and is calling on the government in Yaoundé to do more to protect these vulnerable women.
Oscar Pistorius arrived at the Pretoria High Court today at the start of the 35th day of his murder trial.
Israeli troops have raided the homes of two men suspected of abducting three Israeli teenagers whose bodies were found Monday, nearly 3 weeks after they disappeared.
And the Italian Navy has found the bodies of 30 migrants in the hold of a smuggler's boat.
You talked, we listened. By popular demand, Studio 7 Live Talk is launching our very own Women's Round Table, starting Thursday, July 16. This show seeks to address issues of concern to us as women. Tell us what you want us to discuss via email at studio7@voanews.com. The address again, studio7@voanews.com, or on WhatsApp 1-202-465-0318. The number again, 1-202-465-0318. And of course, on our Studio 7 Facebook page.
A Zimbabwe Investment Authority tells the Foreign Affairs National Assembly Portfolio Committee that there is need to come up with friendly investor regulations as well as reducing the number of regulatory bodies involved in dealing with investors. Zimbabwe Investment Authority Chairman Richard Mubaiwa told the committee that the current investment climate in the country is not conducive for attracting foreign businesses. He said Zimbabwe needs to revive some laws that discourage investment. Zimbabwe's Black Economic Empowerment Program is feared by foreign investors as it compels them to transfer a majority stake to locals.
A recently released report on agriculture in Africa points to entrepreneurship as the key to improving and sustaining food production on the continent. The report, Small and Growing Entrepreneurship in African Agriculture, was released in London last week by the Montpellier Panel, a group of agriculture and trade experts from Europe and Africa who are working together to improve food sustainability in sub-Saharan Africa. The report calls for increased investment for entrepreneurship in the rural food sector and cities and cites agriculture as the key sector for creating jobs and for African youth. Daniel Gard is an entrepreneur who heads Omega Farms just outside of Addis Ababa. He spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis about the significance of the new report.
Africa produces over $280 billion worth of agriculture products, and most of that production is not in the value chain. Most of it is raw grain and raw cereals that are produced by very poorly paid farmers.
As an entrepreneur yourself with running the Omega Farms business just outside of Addis Ababa, what would you say are some of your biggest challenges right now?
Retaining youth employment, keeping the young men and women who are from the rural countryside to grow and develop and become entrepreneur and business people. the young women are attracted by jobs into the urban communities, young men as well. The development of the urban centers is forcing a lot of migration into the cities because the wages are higher, more rewarding, and more interesting work. Agriculture is perceived as a bit old-fashioned, not rewarding, not dynamic, does not have a lot of things to do with the internet or any of the new technologies. I would like to see more entrepreneurial opportunities for young women and men in the rural countryside. And as you see in the Montpellier report, refers to the need for development of training and education programs in entrepreneurial skills and maybe some form of incubation system to teach young women and men how to become businessmen, how to develop new products, new services, and get more into the value chain in the rural countryside.
That was Daniel Gad, Managing Director of Omega Farms. He spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis from Addis Ababa in Ethiopia.
You talked, we listened. By popular demand, Studio 7 Live Talk is launching our very own Women's Round Table starting Thursday, July 16. This show seeks to address issues of concern to us as women. Tell us what you want us to discuss via email at studio7@voanews.com. The address again, studio7@voanews.com, or on WhatsApp 1-202-465-0318. The number again, 1-202-465-0318. And of course, on our Studio 7 Facebook page.
Some Zimbabwe lawmakers are reportedly stranded in a remote Chinese province, according to the Independent News Day newspaper. The parliamentarians were on a private visit to China when they decided to visit Guangdong province, more than 2,000 kilometers from the capital, Beijing. The paper reports that the lawmakers, whose trip was led by Makoni's South ZANU-PF MP Mandichi Mene, decided to go to Guangdong to buy what they believed were cheaper goods but got stuck. The MPs reportedly missed their flight, and the next flight will be July 10th. It is not known how they are surviving, as they are said to be running out of cash. MDCT Parliamentary Chief Whip Innocent Gonese declined to comment, saying his party had nothing to do with the trip. Efforts to reach Mene were also fruitless, as his mobile phone was switched off.
And now at 2014 World Cup, we have Voice of America sports analyst Nico Pinault speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawie about the current stage of the tournament.
Hi, it's Nico Pinault for Voice of America live from Brasilia.
Hey Nico, today we see that the USA will play Belgium for a spot in the quarterfinals, with Brazil, Colombia, Netherlands, Costa Rica, Germany, France having qualified. How much pressure do you think is on coach Jürgen Klinsmann to get this space for the USA?
Yeah, the Americans, they're going to try to do better than what they did in 2010 when they were eliminated by Ghana at the same stage of the competition. So I think Jürgen Klinsmann, the coach, is fully aware of all the expectations back in the United States. And you're going to have a lot of pressure still on the captain, Captain Dempsey, who is a star among this team. It might be open because you have the fighting spirit of the Americans, and you have on the other side more technique among Belgium. So I think there's a slightly advantage for the Belgium because they have more experience, but Americans have proved against, for example, Ghana or Germany that they are able to do anything, especially to score. Thank you, Nico Pino, live from Brazil for Voice of America.
Thank you, Nico Pino, and he was speaking to Marvelous Mhlanganyawie from Brazil.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will be talking with listeners and experts about the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo's legacy.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Now, a quick recap of today's top stories.
In a move to curb power theft by consumers, the government says plans to switch from prepaid meters to smart meters are at an advanced stage.
Zimbabweans across the political divide joined hands today to commemorate